Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, May 8th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Cunningham Children's Home, no work, all play. Vice President set to retire after 47 years at agency. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Urbana. Plenty has changed at Cunningham Children's Home since Pat Ege started working there, and plenty has changed in the social work world itself. That's what happens when you stick to one career for 47 years. Having been here so long, kids come back and they'll talk to me about, "Hey, you did this," Ege said, and I won't even remember or know that that had an impact on them. Currently the Vice President of Program Services, Ege is finally about to call it a career, with her sights set on traveling, volunteer work, and photography during retirement. When she started at Cunningham, Ege was a recent Illinois State University graduate with a degree in recreation. She estimates she changed majors about 6 times during her time at ISU, but she knew the one she graduated with was the right one. "I love to play," Ege said. "In an environment like Cunningham, play becomes a way to connect with kids, help them communicate, and train different skills. For Ege, it was a blast. I learned how to water ski, I drove a speedboat, rock climbed, did activities in trees, to help kids work together and learn teamwork," she said. "I felt like a kid extended." She was the very first hire of her first boss at Cunningham, Vince Kennedy. 47 years later, he says he got the first one right. "I remember you requested a short leave of absence. I was really hesitant to grant it because I was afraid you'd never come back," he told her after hearing news of her retirement. "You not only came back, you never left again until 47 years later." He said he could always count on her judgment and that she would always do the right thing, not just for the organization, but also for the kids as individuals. "I could not even do any kind of math that could estimate the numbers of kids you have influenced and made a difference in their lives after so long," Kennedy said. Ege didn't stay in that recreation role as much as she loved it. One of the reasons she stayed at Cunningham all this time, she said, was the opportunity for growth. Even while working at the same place, she said she was able to keep learning new things and advance her career. Her second role was in case management, which was very different from recreation, aside from the fact that she was still working closely with the kids. Now she found herself learning about court reports and legal processes and navigating the world of foster care. Ege applied to the University of Illinois to get a master's degree in social work around this time and was rejected, prompting her to apply to Eastern Illinois University instead. She received her master's from EIU, then returned and earned another from the U of I, where she also later became an adjunct professor. The home allowed her to continue her education that way, but she said she learned even more from the kids, especially on long drives up to Chicago. At that time, Cunningham served youth from that area, so Ege would have to drive them to court at times. "You learn a lot in the car, and I work mostly with boys, and they would talk more in the car or shooting hoops outside while they were playing," she said. "That is the way to reach kids," she said. The kids would open up about their personal issues and even gave Ege advice on staying safe in certain Chicago neighborhoods. "That shows they care, and that sense of relationship with kids. How many jobs can you do that at that level and see that difference that you can make?" Ege said. "And I just felt like I learned so much from the kids, too." Current Cunningham CEO Marlon Livingston said he, in turn, has learned from Ege. He worked at the home in the 90s, then returned in 2008 as the CEO, with Ege already in her vice president role. "I get the benefit of Pat's wisdom. More than anything, Pat's been a colleague to me and made me a better social worker and a better leader," Livingston said. "She's been the vanguard of our values." More than anything, he said he respects Ege's integrity and is glad that her long-term work at Cunningham has helped to establish that value firmly. He said that carries through in standing up to day-to-day challenges, as well as owning up to and working to repair any mistakes. The agency will celebrate Ige's retirement with a party bringing back fellow employees, as well as people she helped throughout the years. The soccer field that kids staying at Cunningham or attending Circle Academy play at is also set to be named in her honor. Livingston said they had to talk her into accepting the honor, but that the staff felt it was the perfect way to commemorate her work. She just has such a love of sports and the healing power of sports, he said. Even as she steps away, Ige says she definitely won't be leaving Cunningham Children's Home in the dust. As an advocate for the agency, she still intends to help out where she can in its efforts to get funding. She also has connections around the community and at the university that she knows will help. I'll still be a part of the agency, Ige said. It's just a special place. The next front page story is Canvas. Global cyber attack leads to UI postponing all finals assignments. Story by Jeff D'Alessio, out of Urbana. Finals week will get a late start at the University of Illinois following a global cyber attack that struck the online learning service management system used by universities across the country. Late Thursday night, the UI announced that all final exams and assignments, including papers, projects, etc., scheduled for Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, are postponed. For the sake of consistency and clarity, the Mass Mail added, the university is extending this policy to all classes, including those that don't currently utilize Canvas. The UI was among dozens of universities that issued statements Thursday calling students and staff's attention to the reported hack at Canvas, which has left faculty without the ability to grade tests and cut off all online access to coursework. In an email to faculty earlier Thursday, College of Law Dean Jamel Sharp warned that it is possible that the disruption could last several days, asking members to begin considering alternative methods for distributing any materials students may need to complete examinations, final papers, or other end-of-semester assignments. University leaders said they would consult with the deans and the Senate Executive Committee regarding next steps and will communicate to the campus community before noon Sunday with more details regarding Canvas, assignments, and final exams currently scheduled for next week. CNN reported that the hacking group Shiny Hunters claimed responsibility and, according to multiple student news outlets, was demanding ransom. And the next story on the front page is Episode 70, As Heard On, airing from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday on WDWS 1400 AM and streaming online at newsgazette.com. The stretch of County Road 1900 East that runs over I-74 in St. Joseph will soon be known as the Trooper Corey S. Thompson Memorial Overpass, honoring the one-time Spartans cross-country star killed in 2024 while on duty as a state trooper. Thompson's family was in Springfield Thursday to speak at the police memorial ceremony and watch the state house pass a Senate joint resolution sponsored by Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, Paul Faraci, Democrat of Champaign, and Jason Plummer, Republican of Edwardsville. Said Rose, honoring our fallen heroes is among the very most important duties in public service. Trooper Thompson led by example his entire life, and it was my great honor to play a small part in honoring his life. Mr. Thompson, 28, was finishing a traffic enforcement detail north of Champaign on October 18, 2024, when another driver pulled into the roadway and struck his motorcycle. In the first 4 months of a typical year, 20 tornadoes are reported across the land of Lincoln. But as siren-wary Illinoisans know by now, 2026 has been anything but typical. Through April, according to National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration data, there have been 119 tornado reports across Illinois, more than twice the total of the next closest state, Mississippi, at 53. Blame it on a jet stream that has positioned itself over the Midwest instead of the Southern Plains, with Illinois right in the bullseye, AccuWeather meteorologist Melissa Constanzer said on Thursday's show. And turning now to national and world news, international trade. Invalid and unauthorized. Federal court rules against new global tariffs Trump imposed after loss at Supreme Court. Story out of Washington and the AP. A federal court ruled Thursday against the new global tariffs that President Donald Trump imposed after a stinging loss at the Supreme Court. A split three-judge panel of the Court of International Trade in New York found the 10% global tariffs were illegal after small businesses sued. The court ruled 2-1 that Trump overstepped the tariff power that Congress had allowed the president under the law. The tariffs are invalid and unauthorized by law, the majority wrote. The third judge on the panel found the law allows the president more leeway on tariffs. If the administration appeals Thursday's decision as expected, it would first turn to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, based in Washington, and then potentially the Supreme Court. At issue are temporary 10% worldwide tariffs the Trump administration imposed after the Supreme Court in February struck down even broader double-digit tariffs the president had imposed last year on almost every country on Earth. The new tariffs, invoked under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974, were set to expire July 24. The court's decision directly blocked the collection of tariffs from three plaintiffs, the state of Washington and two businesses, spice company Burlap and Barrel and toy company Basic Fun. It's not clear whether other businesses would have to continue to pay the tariffs, said Jeffrey Schwab, director of litigation at the Libertarian Liberty Justice Center, which represented the two companies. We fought back today and we won and we're extremely excited, Jay Foreman, CEO of Basic Fun, told reporters Thursday. The ruling marked another legal setback for the Trump administration, which has attempted to shield the U.S. economy behind a wall of import taxes. Last year, Trump invoked the 1977 International Emergency Economic Powers Act to declare the nation's long-standing trade deficit a national emergency, justifying sweeping global tariffs. The Supreme Court ruled February 28th that the act did not authorize the tariffs. The U.S. Constitution gives Congress the power to establish taxes, including tariffs, though lawmakers can delegate tariff power to the president. Dave Townsend, a trade lawyer at Dorsey & Whitney, said the ruling will open the door for more companies to request that the tariffs be thrown out and that any payments they've made be refunded. Other importers likely will now ask for a broader remedy that applies to more companies, Townsend said, though he cautioned the case could also reach the Supreme Court. Trump is already taking steps to replace the tariffs that were struck down by the Supreme Court in January. The administration is conducting two investigations that could end in more tariffs. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative is looking into whether 16 U.S. trading partners, including China, the European Union, and Japan, are overproducing goods, driving down prices, and putting U.S. manufacturers at a disadvantage. It is also investigating whether 60 economies, from Nigeria to Norway, and accounting for 99% of U.S. imports, do enough to prohibit the trade in products created by forced labor. The inset in that story is, Trump says EU has until July 4 to okay last year's trade deal or face higher tariffs. Story out of Washington in the AP. President Donald Trump said in a Thursday social media post that goods from the European Union could face higher tariff rates if the 27-member bloc fails to approve last year's trade framework by July 4th. The announcement appeared to be a deadline extension after the president said last Friday that EU autos would face a higher 25% tariff starting this week. Trump made the updated announcement after what he described as a great call with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Still, the U.S. president was displeased that the European Parliament had yet to finalize the trade arrangement reached last year, which was further complicated in February by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that Trump lacked the legal authority to declare an economic emergency to impose the initial tariffs used to pressure the EU into talks. A promise was made that the EU would deliver their side of the deal and, as per agreement, cut their tariffs to zero, Trump posted. I agreed to give her until our country's 250th birthday, or, unfortunately, their tariffs would immediately jump to much higher levels. And the next story on the National and World News is Hantavirus outbreak. Health officials tracking dozens who left ship after first death. Out of Madrid and the AP. Health authorities across four continents Thursday were tracking down and monitoring passengers who disembarked a hantavirus-stricken cruise ship before its deadly outbreak was detected, and trying to trace others who may have come into contact with them since then. In Argentina, a team of investigators has yet to leave for the southern town where they suspect the outbreak originated, officials from the country's health ministry told the Associated Press on Thursday. The Argentine investigators suspect a Dutch couple may have contracted the virus while on a birdwatching trip before they boarded the cruise ship. On April 24th, nearly 2 weeks after the first passenger had died on board, more than two dozen people from at least 12 different countries left the ship without contact tracing, the ship's operator and Dutch officials said Thursday. Three passengers have died in the outbreak, a Dutch couple and a German national, and several others are sick. Symptoms usually show between 1 to 8 weeks after exposure. None of the remaining passengers or crew on the ship are currently symptomatic, the Netherlands-based Oceanwide Expeditions cruise ship company said Thursday. The World Health Organization says the risk to the wider public is low. Hantavirus is usually spread by the inhalation of contaminated rodent droppings and isn't easily transmitted between people. We believe this will be a limited outbreak if the public health measures are implemented and solidarity is shown across all countries, said Dr. Abdirahman Mahamoud, the WHO's Alert and Response Director, on Thursday. Three people, including the ship's doctor, were evacuated Wednesday while the ship was near the West African island country of Cape Verde and taken to specialized hospitals in Europe for treatment. The body of the Dutchman, who was the first to die on board on April 11th, was taken off the ship on the remote South Atlantic island of St. Helena on April 24, when his wife also disembarked. She then flew to South Africa a day later and died there. The ship's operator said Thursday that a total of 30 passengers, including the deceased Dutchman and his wife, left the vessel at St. Helena. The Dutch Foreign Ministry has put the figure at about 40. The company had not previously said publicly that dozens more people left the ship on April 24. The stop was the scheduled end of the cruise for some passengers. It wasn't until May 2nd that health authorities first confirmed hantavirus in a ship passenger, the WHO says. The next story on National and World News. State Department. U.S. will start revoking passports for thousands who owe child support. Story by Matthew Lee, AP diplomatic writer, out of Washington. The U.S. State Department will begin revoking the U.S. passports of thousands of parents who owe a significant amount of unpaid child support. The department told the Associated Press on Thursday that the revocations would begin Friday and be focused on those who owe $100,000 or more. That would apply to about 2,700 American passport holders, according to figures supplied to the State Department by the Department of Health and Human Services. The revocation program, plans for which were first reported by the AP in February, soon will be greatly expanded to cover parents who owe more than $2,500 in unpaid child support, the threshold set by a little-enforced 1996 law, the State Department said. It was not clear on Thursday how many passport holders owe more than $2,500 because HHS is still collecting data from state agencies that track the figures, but it could encompass many more thousands of people, officials said. Until this week, only those who applied to renew their passports were subject to the penalty. Under the new policy, HHS will inform the State Department of all past due payments of more than $2,500, and parents in that group with passports will have their documents revoked, the department said. We are expanding a common-sense practice that has been proven effective at getting those who owe child support to pay their debt, Assistant Secretary of State for Consular Affairs Maura Namdar said. Once those parents resolve their debts, they can once again enjoy the privilege of a U.S. passport. Since the AP reported the expansion of the program on February 10th, the department said it had seen data that hundreds of parents took action and resolved their arrears with state authorities since news broke that the State Department would start proactively revoking passports. While we can't confirm the causation in all of those cases, we are taking this action precisely to impel these parents to do the right thing by their children and by U.S. law, the department said. Even before the policy was expanded, the department said the program had been a powerful tool to get parents to pay what they owed. It said that since it began in earnest in 1998, states have collected some $657 million in arrears, including more than $156 million in over 24,000 individual lump sum payments over the past 5 years. Those whose passports are revoked under the program will be notified that they will not be able to use their documents for travel and will have to apply for a new passport once their arrears are confirmed as paid. A passport holder abroad at the time of revocation will need to visit a U.S. embassy or consulate to obtain an emergency travel document that allows them to return to the United States. The next story on national and world news. United States Postal Service, USPS, considers allowing people to ship handguns through mail. Story out of Las Vegas in the AP. Handguns could be mailed through the United States Postal Service for the first time in nearly 100 years if a proposed rule under the Trump administration takes effect. Democratic attorneys general in 24 states sent a letter this week in opposition. In 1927, Congress passed a law barring the USPS from mailing concealable firearms unless they were from licensed dealers in an effort to curb crime. In January, the Department of Justice revisited the 1927 law, calling it unconstitutional and arguing that it violated the Second Amendment, and urged the Postal Service to change its regulations. The Department of Justice said that as long as Congress chooses to run the parcel service, the Second Amendment precludes it from refusing to ship constitutionally protected firearms to and from law-abiding citizens, even if they are not licensed manufacturers or dealers. Last month, USPS proposed a new rule that would allow anyone to mail concealable firearms like pistols and revolvers. The USPS currently allows some firearms, like long-barreled rifles and shotguns, to be mailed. However, they must be unloaded and securely packaged. Similar protections would be in place for handguns, which have evolved since 1927. The USPS said in a statement that it is reviewing public comments, which were due Monday, before making final changes. Nevada Attorney General Aaron Ford, a Democrat running for governor, said the rule change would undo the work states like Nevada have done to curb gun violence. Nevada experienced the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history when a gunman on October 1, 2017, opened fire from the Mandalay Bay Casino Hotel in Las Vegas, killing 60 people. Following the shooting, Nevada passed a law requiring state-administered background checks on most private gun sales or transfers. Under the proposed rules, someone could sell and ship a gun to a person within state lines. The rules are tighter for mailing guns across state lines. People could only mail it to themselves in the care of another person and would be required to open it themselves. Next story on national and world news. Alleged threats against Donald Trump. Ex-FBI director seeks to cancel upcoming court appearance in North Carolina. Story out of Washington in the AP. Former FBI Director James Comey asked Thursday to cancel his upcoming court appearance in North Carolina, saying it was unnecessary because he had already surrendered in Virginia and faced a judge on charges that he threatened President Donald Trump. The Department of Justice is supporting the request. Comey was charged in a two-count indictment last week with knowingly and willfully communicating a threat against Trump by posting an Instagram photo of seashells in a numerical arrangement of 86-47. Prosecutors allege the photo constituted a threat against Trump, the 47th president. Comey has said he assumed the seashell arrangement, which he says he found on a beach, reflected a political message, not a call to violence, and that he removed the post once he saw that some people were interpreting it as a threat. He is currently set to appear Monday in a federal court in Greenville, North Carolina, but his lawyers urged a judge on Thursday to cancel that appearance. They noted that he had surrendered and appeared last week before a judge in Virginia, where he lives, and that the Justice Department has consented to their request. Responding to a defense filing, the judge in the case said she would cancel the court date provided that Comey files a waiver of appearance on or before Friday. The case is the second brought by the Trump Administration Justice Department against Comey, a longtime perceived adversary of the Republican president. An earlier unrelated prosecution accused Comey of making a false statement to Congress was dismissed by a judge who concluded that the prosecutor who filed the case was illegally appointed. Legal experts have questioned whether the Justice Department can meet the high legal standard of proving that Comey intended his Instagram post to be a threat. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche has said investigators have evidence beyond just the post itself. He has not elaborated. Merriam-Webster, the dictionary used by the Associated Press, says 86 is slang meaning to throw out, to get rid of, or to refuse service to. It notes, among the most recent senses adopted is a logical extension of the previous one with the meaning of to kill. We do not enter this sense due to its relative recency and sparseness of use. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Friday, May 8th, 2026. Please stay tuned.